And this will be Sikhism. So this is always a good place to start. How many of you have heard of Sikhism? But just by a show of hands, so I get an idea. Okay, a few of you have. Have any of you ever met someone of that religion? Yes, okay. They're very distinct in their dress, so you will know it if you have, if you know what you're looking for. It is a religion of about 26 million worldwide. About 75% of all Sikhs still live in India. And actually they live in a particular part of India, the Punjab province. There are significant communities of them in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in Singapore, and Malaysia. And you see their most famous temple, which is in that Punjab province, the Harmandir Sahib, or the Golden Temple. A very famous temple. Maybe you've seen that on a documentary before. Sikhism arose in the Punjab province of India in the 16th century. And its founder, a man by the name of Nanak, attempted to harmonize Hinduism and Islam into one faith. So this is synchronizing Hinduism and Islam into one faith. As you can imagine, this is quite a task. I can't think of two more different religions in some ways. Well, Nanak, who lived from 1469 to 1539, was the founder of this religion. And he was born to Hindu parents, and through his life, he seems to have been very interested in religious questions. He sought their answers throughout his youth. Well, at the age of 33, he supposedly received his divine call. And he went out one day from his village and went missing for some time. And then reappeared unexpectedly. Some thought he had drowned. However, he claimed at the time he had received a divine call. And here is the account of what is said to have occurred. One day, after bathing, Nanak disappeared into the forest and was taken in a vision to God's presence. He was offered a cup of nectar, which he gratefully accepted. God said to him, I am with thee. I have made thee happy, and those who shall take thy name. Go and repeat mine, and cause others to do likewise. Abide uncontaminated by the world. Practice the repetition of my name, charity, worship, washings, worship, and meditation. My name is God. the primal Brahma, and you are the divine guru. Well, when Nanak reappeared, he had a famous statement. He says, there is neither Hindu nor Muslim. And his message would spread through the Punjab. And it should point out that in the Punjab, there were both Muslims and Hindus. So you can see that this would be a force that would kind of be bringing on these thoughts. Nanak is considered one of the 10 gurus who would influence Sikhism. All are important. However, there are a few notable gurus that I should mention and their contributions. Amar Das, who was the third guru, promoted the idea of salvation within Sikhism. He also formulated ceremonies for major life events, such as birth, marriage, death, and he centralized oversight of local religious practices. The fifth guru, Arjun, compiled material from previous gurus as well as materials from Hindu and Islamic sources, which would eventually become the Adi Granth, which means the first book, the Adi Granth. And this is the sacred book of Sikhism. Arjun also would assume important political and military responsibilities because Sikhs would become in conflict with the Islamic Mughal Empire, which ruled India at this time. Gobind Singh was the 10th and final guru. He formalized the final text of the Adi Granth. He made a ritual for baptism and decreed that the sequence of living gurus would end with him. After him, the sacred text known as the Guru Granth Sahib would be the guru, and it would be the object of devotion in the Sikh houses of worship. And I should point out that it is also the Adi Granth. It's the same book, the Guru Granth Sahib. So what are their beliefs? Well, as you can imagine, the teachings of Sikhism are a synchronization of the doctrines of Islam and Hinduism. You can bring pretty much anything together if you put your mind to it. Generally, Sikhs did not borrow from the scriptures of either religion, but wrote their own scripture based on their interpretations of those two faiths. They reject some teachings of Islam and some teachings of Hinduism. And it is a very interesting combination that they were able to put together. Regarding their holy book, the sacred scriptures of the Sikhism are known as the Granth Sahib, or Lord's Book. Many different authors wrote portions of the work. As a matter of fact, several dozen. Some even lived before Nanak and had no strong connection to the Sikh faith. The book is made up of a collection of poems, which total about 30,000 rhymed verses. The central theme is extolling the name of God and instructions for daily living. The book is written in 6 languages with several different dialects. Few Sikhs know all these languages, and most Sikhs do not know their holy book very well. However, they will treat it with great reverence. One author said they treat it with a reverence bordering on idolatry. Just to give you a sample here, of their holy book, one famous passage says the following: I observe neither Hindu fasting nor the ritual of Muslim Ramadan month. Him I serve who at the last shall save. The Lord of universe of the Hindus, Gosain and Allah, to me are one. From Hindus and Muslims have I broken free. I perform neither Kaaba pilgrimage nor a at bathing spot worship. Regarding their beliefs about God, what do they think about God? Well, they believe in one God who is sovereign over all things. Nanak said, there is but one God whose name is true, creator, devoid of fear and enmity, immortal, unborn, self-existent, great and bountiful. The true one was in the beginning. The name given God is Sat Nam, which means true name. So that's what their God's name means. Although God may be called different names since he takes on various manifestations. God is not seen as personal, but usually equated with truth and reality. Regarding salvation, they don't believe in a day of judgment per se. There is no heaven or hell. They believe in reincarnation. And for them, paradise, or what happens to you in the end, is union with the divine after being released from the cycle of birth and death. They also believe in reincarnation. So you are united with the divine after being released from the cycle of birth and death. So you still see that Hindu influence within this religion as well. So what is the purpose of your life if you are a Sikh? What is it that you are being called to do? You're called to overcome your egotistic desires. Live a life in harmony with God every day. Behave ethically. Fight for what is right. They also have things that you are called to avoid as well. A number of these you would find on the, you know, within Christianity, definitely, to some degree all. Avoid lust, anger, greed, attachment to the physical world, and pride. Sikhs pray several times a day. They also will not worship idols, images, or icons. Once again, you see some influence from Islam there. They also will not consume alcohol, marijuana, liquor, or any other kind of intoxicating item. Caffeine? Okay, on that I don't know. I don't know, yeah. When a Sikh is baptized, all men will share the name Singh. So that's one way you can tell that if a person is Sikh or not, is if they have the last name Singh, the chances are very high that they are either either Sikh or they have that heritage. As far as females go, and by the way, the name Singh means lion, and females will go by the name Kaur, which means princess. So all Sikh men and women will have this last name. As I said, they're fairly easy to recognize because they will wear, men wear turbans as a sign of being committed to the 10 gurus and a willingness to serve as an instrument of God's will. Baptized Sikhs are considered initiated in Kasala, that is, baptism. And Kasala literally means pure, and are known as Kasala Sikhs. They're obliged at this point to wear certain items, which are articles related to their faith, known as the 5Ks. And occasionally you'll see some slightly different interpretations or of what these things mean, symbols mean, but these are generally correct. So you see here, for instance, they have uncut hair. Sikhs will not cut their hair once they have been baptized at any point in their lives. So as you can imagine, their hair can get quite long. This is called Kes. It says, uncut hair and beard is given by God to sustain him or her in higher consciousness. And a turban, the crown of spirituality. When I was in college, I had a professor who is a Sikh, and he told us further that their uncut hair, at least that of a man, was not to be shown in public. So they would not show their hair in public. A student asked him if she could see his hair, because he had pointed out it had never been cut. And he said for him, it would be like taking off your pants. that you would be naked, kind of, if you took off this turban. And he claimed he had this story. I don't know how exactly this worked, but he said that when he was studying for, I think it was his doctoral examination, that he had to study through the night, and to keep himself up, he somehow wrapped his hair around a ceiling fan. So I'm trying to envision how you do that, but he said he did it to keep his head up so he wouldn't fall asleep. So it must be pretty long.
Practical.
Yeah, I guess practical for studying. But so that is one thing worn. There is also the conga, a small comb. We see that the small comb, a wooden comb to properly groom the hair as a symbol of cleanliness. There is a kara, a steel circle worn on the wrist, signifying bondage to truth and freedom from every other entanglement. Then there is a kirpan, the sword with which the kasala is committed to righteously defend the fine line of the truth.
Why such wording sounds so funny? Defend the fine line of the truth.
I have no idea.
Where's the fine line?
I just found this, and that's how they put it. Well, I guess maybe, that is not just defend the truth, but the fine line of the truth. Interesting wording, it is. And then, the kachera, specially made cotton underwear as a reminder of commitment to purity. So once you have been baptized and are male, you are to wear these various garments and items as a sign of being a baptized Sikh. Oh, one other thing I should just briefly touch on related to Sikhism. A Sikh, according to Article 1, according to their Ret Maryada, which is the authoritative guide to conduct within the Sikh faith, defines who can call themselves a Sikh, what it is you have to believe and do. There are five things. One, you have to believe in one immortal being. You have to believe in one immortal being. Two, you have to acknowledge the 10 gurus. Three, you have to look at the Guru Granth Sahib as the holy book. You have to believe the utterances and teachings of the 10 gurus. And you have to accept the baptism bequeathed by the 10th guru. And you cannot owe any other allegiance to any other religion. So you must be committed to the Sikh faith. All right, so Christianity and Sikhism, just briefly.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said that not every Sikh read the book. So why is that? Is there a rule that you have to read it?
Well, I guess the way I would put that is this, that in Christianity, we are also supposed to read our Bibles, right? So just because people are supposed to does not mean that they do. But good question. Yeah, sometimes that's also something. Sometimes we think that people are different than the average Christians we meet sometimes, that they are all just completely know their religion backwards and forwards. No, there's the whole variation, just like us. So about Christianity and Sikhism, differences in comparison. Christianity teaches there is only one religion, while Sikhism attempts to combine two completely unrelated religions. And the concept of combining religions is completely foreign to the Bible. Right? I mean, you cannot be both a Christian and a Buddhist. But Sikhs try to bring these two very different faiths together. Also, Sikhism presents God as impersonal and abstract. And the God of the Bible is, of course, not abstract, he is personal.
Again, this abstract God came to Nanak and told something to him. Same thing like to Buddha and stuff. That's cool to have a personal God that's impersonal.
Yeah, it makes you think, right? How do you get there? That doesn't mean everything will be consistent. Mm-hmm. And there are some different terms which you can look over that we've already gone over, many of which we've already gone over. All right, any questions or comments before we go to break?
I mean, in Islam, you have the personal God. How's it
How do they relate that? Well, I mean, they will synchronize different things into the religion and, you know, bring certain things in and keep certain things out. So when you start combining things, you can pick and choose as you desire. Allah still in his own way is somewhat distant. He is personal, but not in the Christian sense. We'll get into that when we get into Islam. But still, the basic principle is this. Once you get into picking and choosing, and that's not just with this, it's with Christianity as well. Once you start being able to pick and choose what you like about Scripture and discarding what you don't, you can always make something new and very different. All right, it's time for a break. Let's take a break until 10:05.